Hello and welcome to the BVL Digital Podcast, the official podcast of the German Logistics Association, BVL. I'm your host, Boris Felgendreher, and today we have another very exciting international guest on the program. Akash Gupta is one of the two founders and the chief technology officer of Grey Orange. Grey Orange combines smart warehouse and fulfillment robots with an AI-enabled platform and has become one of the major players in this fast-growing, quickly evolving field. Akash is a young guy from India, where he started his company 10 years ago in his early 20s. Grey Orange may not be a household name here in Germany yet, but I think that's about to change because Grey Orange is making a major push into the European market as we speak. So it's time to take a closer look at what Akash and his team at Grey Orange are up to. Happy listening. Hello, Akash. Welcome to the BVL Digital Podcast. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, Akash, where am I catching you? Where are you calling in from? We're calling halfway around the globe. That's so much, I assume, because I'm in Germany. Where are you based right now? Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from San Francisco.
Global citizen as you are. That's right. So it's quite early then in the morning. So you grabbed your coffee. So you're all ready to roll. Fantastic. That's good.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for being on the program. I've done some research on you. And the more I've done research and read up on the Grey Orange story and the Akash story, I became quite fascinated because you're a very young guy. I mean, I assume you're late 20s, early 30s. You've spent all your entire career at this startup that you founded 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go back. I want you to take us back all the way back to, you know, maybe your childhood. I know you're from India. You grew up in rural India. Let's go there. I want to really get the story because I think it's quite fascinating. Take us back to when you were a little boy dreaming of robots.
Well, absolutely. Sure. So I think I pretty much grew in this town in India called Kanpur, somewhere in northern India, close to 300 miles from Delhi, the capital. And and I think school days was more around I would say on programming, and I would say getting more and more about 3D designing, programming, animations. I think school days was more of that, and of course, in India, the competition for colleges is pretty hard. So, interesting part, I guess, started as I kind of got to Bits Pilani, which is the kind of college I did my bachelor's from. And I realized as I kind of started spending time in college that I think while I knew a lot about physics, chemistry, science in theory, but had never really kind of did a lot of hands-on stuff, right? And normally you would know all the theorems and things like that of science, but you haven't never played with it. And so I think my first I would say thought in college was, how do I start getting my hands dirty, right? How do I start getting more and more understanding? And I think I found a perfect, I would say, place to do that. In Pilani, there was this project called Akyut, which was, in very early days, this project was all about building humanoid robots, right? I think I got very interested in that. And, that's where I met my co-founder, Same, who was part of the project. So we started building humanoids, and that was one hell of a journey because it got you deep into learning everything, right? As learning how to design parts for the humanoid, I was learning how to manufacture them. I learned how to run CNC machines, and I started manufacturing parts on CNC machines. And then I started programming on microcontrollers. I started learning how to do embedded programming. I started learning how to make PCBs, build PCBs. So I think that was an incredible journey. And we started participating in these robotic competitions across the world. In fact, it's ironical that the first part, first competition we participated is, was in SF, which was called Robo Games. It was like, Olympics for robotics. And, back in 2009, we won a bronze medal in humanoid robotics. And, I remember coming back in 2010 and, we won a gold and a silver. And then we moved to a different competition called Robo Cup, which is pretty interesting. It's 3-on-3, three humanoid robots against other three humanoid robots, completely autonomous, playing soccer. So,
you're hitting on, I hate to interrupt you, but you're hitting on so many points that our German audience will so much appreciate. You're talking about, you know, electrical and mechanical engineering, and you're talking about tinkering, you're talking about building hardware, and then you're talking about football and soccer. You know, you have a lot of fans already in the German audience. That's right.
Yeah, and the awesome thing about kind of doing things, around this challenge of RoboCup is that you have to create a fairly complex algorithm and software, right? Because it's 3-on-3, soccer. So you're doing a bunch of things around image processing. You're doing a bunch of things about, you know, humanoid robot balancing and coordination between bots. So I think that's where a large amount of, I would say, software experience I got. And so, yeah, I think all those experiences really kind of gave us all the aspect of how do you take a real world problem and solve it through, I would say, intelligent software, right? And then, combining with robotics. And that kind of got us to, journey around, Grey Orange. And the first thought process was to start building, general robotic solutions, right? So, for example, we did a sonar stabilizer, we did a medical machine and things like that. This is again back in 2011, 2012. And what happened actually when we were in 2012, within the Grey Orange journey, we thought that we are doing too many different stuff, right? We were doing different robotic projects and different software projects. And I think that got us to the point that, let's choose industry, right? And then try and solve for a certain core problem set, but let's do that for a longer period of time so that you can become better at it every time you solve for the problem. So we started looking at the industry, and then the supply chain logistics industry caught our caught our attention. And I think when we did a fair amount of research into that, and honestly, at that point of time, for a fair amount of research is like 1 month, right? It's not that now that you got to do the whole research, but it's when we did that, I think we found very fascinating that while the manufacturing as an industry had gone a lot of changes, industry 3.0, IoT and things like that. And again, the e-commerce industry has, I would say, evolved very, very fast. Supply chain that was, I would say, sitting at the mid of it, connecting manufacturers to consumers, right? We saw that, that industry still hasn't gone through any kind of innovation and things like that, right? So we thought, as consumer to manufacturer transactions become more and more advanced, complex, and consumer needs become more and more, I would say stringent, strict, and on manufacturing side, number of SKUs, started exploding. Rather than people having, let's say, 6 phone models, they would have 60 phone models. So number of SKUs started exploding. And hence supply chain started going through this whole transformation of from pallet-based, supply chain to each-based and case-based, supply chain. So I think that got us intrigued and that started our journey within Grey Orange, where we, kind of decided that, okay, we are going to focus and solve for supply chain, right? And then that's where the journey for Grey Orange of today started.
Yeah, and also innovation happened in pockets, right? So when you're talking 2010 and 12, that time frame, you had a lot of innovation happening in pockets, meaning Amazon, for example, being super smart and being super on the leading edge and acquiring Kiva robots and so forth. Yep. You probably monitored all of that. Was that some sort of inspiration for you guys as well, seeing where the journey is going by looking at what the key players are doing?
Yeah, actually, Kiva Robotics acquisition happened 10 months down the line when we have already decided the supply chain story. We decided this in somewhere in the end of 2011, and it basically gave us more surety that, you know, there is definitely lack of, you know, I would say...
big validation. Validation that that's the right path.
It was good validation. We need to remember this, right? Back in 2012, you know, supply chain wasn't sexy, right? So, you know, it was known as this back-end function that, you know, people, you know, are just, you know, running. That's it. It wasn't till Amazon got it to the point where supply chain started becoming, I would say, the forefront of growth and things like that. And of course, today it's completely different scenario. But at that point of time, when we told people that we are trying to do something in supply chain, the thoughts were more like they are much interesting industries to, kind of solve things for.
And what's also crazy is we're talking 10 years ago. We're not talking like 20 or 25 years ago. We're talking 10 years, which is not a lot of time, right? Especially in the development cycle of hardware. This is not that much time. And so things are changing very, very quickly, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what have you... Let's just take us back to the more recent memory or recent developments of Grey Orange. So fast forward a little bit to where you have customers, you have a working solution, you have systems deployed. And then COVID hit. So that's probably another sort of accelerator or major milestone, I would assume, in your journey. Talk to us about how that has sort of put the extra fire, so to speak, onto your oven there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, a couple of pivot points before I come to COVID as we kind of got through that, journey. And I think there are a couple of them which are worth mentioning here, you know, and we'll give some more context to the COVID part as well, is that I think as we went deeper to solve challenges for supply chain fulfillment, right, one thing that we figured out was that, you know, pretty much every, you know, company that was running software for their fulfillment, right, was almost running a bunch of custom softwares across every single, you know, warehouse, right? And I think coming from, you know, the generation, you know, we are, it was very surprising for us that, you know, how does pretty much every single warehouse have a, you know, a custom bit of software running, you know, across that. And, you know, and we thought that might be one reason why there was lesser innovation happening, because if you're running custom piece of software in every company in every warehouse, basically
very limiting,
is not becoming better every day, because if you make enhancement in one of the warehouse, right, it not necessarily enhances your another, you know, warehouse, because, you know, those are two custom pieces. So I think that, you know, that got us to the idea that, you know, when we build, you know, what we today call as Grey Matter, it has to be one single platform across, you know, any kind of fulfillment nodes and across, the customers, because we wanted to make sure that it's a software that, you know, gets better every day, right? And if we do something for, you know, a set of customers, other set of customers should also benefit from that. So I think that was a very intriguing discovery when we kind of got deeper into that.
Let me interrupt. So what you were saying is that you saw two situations. One is where you had individual pieces of licensed and installed software, maybe even made for a pre-e-commerce world, right? Just being deployed in the warehouse, or at least some systems that were not cloud-based and that didn't interact with each other and that didn't. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Cloud, I think, was a stretch by a mile, but not even systems which are, you know, on-prem but yet got upgraded. Like we were talking to customers who were running software systems that were last upgraded 6-7 years back. So it was a very, very different scenario. And I think
you're mentioning Grey Matter, which is your cloud-based system, the operating system, basically. Was that part of the early journey as well? Did you already start off when you were developing the first hardware
absolutely.
It to be okay, that was from the get-go, that was a system, cloud-based SaaS software, and the robots working in unison,
absolutely,
so to speak.
Absolutely. I think the thought process was that, and that insight came when we were doing the RoboCup journey, that at the end of the day, robotics is more of an executionary, right? But what to do, how intelligently it gets done, and when to do, right? The right time, right task to do, needs to be decided by the software. So, you know, I think we from the very beginning, we, and I think, had this thought that, you know, software needs to do the control bit and, you know, take the decisions and things like that. And robotics is something that needs to execute that, you know, with precision, right? Or with reliability. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think that was the thought pretty much from the very beginning. And then I think one more pivot point as we kind of went through that journey was that, you know, in 2000, you know, pretty much 18, we thought that, you know, if we were to serve our customers, you know, in the best possible way, we need to open up our, you know, Grey Matter platform to other third-party robotic technologies as well, right? Because mm-hmm. we knew that there was a lot of innovation that was happening, especially starting from 2017, 2018. We knew that there were a lot of robotic innovations that was happening, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, anybody who's adopting Grey Matter as a platform has access to all the robotic technologies and are limited by just our piece of robotic technology. So, you know, in 2018, we kind of opened up Grey Matter as a platform to, you know, a lot of other robotic technologies. And of course, today we have likes of Vicarious and Fetch and HAI Robotics on our platform. But I think that was another very, I would say, interesting point in the journey where, mm-hmm. you know, we thought that, you know, I think for the good of our customers, community, it's going to be very important if Grey Matter helps customers to onboard these technologies. And I think that kind of led us to, you know, a formal formation of what we today call a certified Ranger network, which is basically a network of technologies that are, you know, seamlessly integrated on Grey Matter, you know, platform. So why I mentioned these two contexts was that now when COVID hit, right, you know, I would say that gave us a very different, these two things, right, of saying that there's a software platform that, you know, I would say is one platform for all the customers and has been kind of growing and has been becoming better, and the third-party technology support, you know, that gave us, I would say, a very good platform to support our customers during COVID, right? And you know, mm-hmm. we just for example, one of our customers, we are running a, you know, omni-channel fulfillment center for them, in, you know, shipping almost, you know, 100,000 units a day, you know, where 70% was retail and 30% was e-commerce, right? And you know, 2 weeks, you know, post lockdowns and things like that, right? The channel mix completely flipped. Shift. You're running 70% e-commerce, 30%, you know, I would say retail. And given the software was, you know, very, very flexible, we could do that within 3 days, right? You know, just you know, do, you know, change some of the configurations, mm-hmm. and without changing a piece of, you know, a line of code, we were able to flip the system to kind of, you know, handle that kind of, you know, channel flip, right? So, you know, mm-hmm. I think, you know, and then, of course, in pandemic, having that flexibility, adding more, you know, robotic technologies, there are, you know, for a lot of our customers where we automated their forward area pick, you know, in pandemic, it got accelerated that can you also automate dock to stock, right? Can you also automate sorting? So, you know, I would say we added more and more technology on the same without going through any new integration, because once you're integrated with Grey Matter, you can add more technology. So I think, you know, as the pandemic hit and the need for ACT became very, very urgent, right? Mm-hmm. Having a software platform and, you know, and capabilities of robotic technologies that you can adopt, you know, very, very quickly, I would say, really kind of helped us help our, you know, customers in those tough times.
Yeah, you were just almost nonchalantly saying, well, in 2017 or 18, we did the switch to open up the platform. But I imagine that to be a difficult undertaking. So it's not just like you just hit a switch or you make a small adjustment and everything just flows. Talk to us about the sort of difficulties of making that happen, because I think that's sort of the big elephant in the room. How do you make that happen? Because that's a challenge that all of your competitors also facing. How do you integrate talk to me about the challenges there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is challenging because you are looking at three core aspects when you are kind of switching that button, right? So one aspect is, of course, the you know, digital interactions of, you know, of the robotic product with the software, right? That is yep. one aspect, and I'll come to it. But, you know, the second aspect is the reliability of the robotic system, right? That you're onboarding of the system, because when pretty much everybody, when you're, let's say, you know, when somebody is adopting gray matter and you're saying these are the technologies supported by gray matter, right? Gray matter needs to make sure that the KPIs that gray matter is promising is basically being met, which means that it is also guaranteeing the performance of the robotic technology that you are kind of bringing in. So that is the second aspect, that as a third party or kind of as a platform, you know, when you are offering that to the customer, how are you ensuring that the, you know, third party technology will reliably work, right? And
right.
Yep. Third part is all around, you know, safety, you know, protocols, because, you know, all these robotic technologies do have, you know, do need to be safe, and they need to be, right. you know, certified and yep. things like that. So I would say I would bucketize the problem set into these three things, right? How do you build, or how do you have a protocol, set of protocols, so that, you know, these robotic technologies can interact with your software? And when we started thinking about this, and I think it took us good, you know, 6 to 9 months of, you know, I would say pretty fierce brainstorming. And we came with the thought process of that, you know, we would have basically, you know, categories of what we today call as agents, right? You know, built in gray matter. So today we have, you know, close to 7 categories of agents, you know, that gray matter can, you know, interact with. So, mm-hmm. for example, AMR was a category of agents, right? You know, mm-hmm. robotic arms was a category of agents, right? And similarly, PLC-based systems was category of agents, right? So we kind of defined those categories. We started defining the data structures for these categories. So today, you know, let's say AMR-based, you know, technology wants to interact with us. We have a pretty defined, you know, data structure and protocol around, okay, this is the category, these are the data structure for that. And there is a registering methodology so that if a, you know, agent of a certain category want to register with gray matter, it registers saying that, okay, I am category X, my speed is this, my volume is this, my safety protocol is this. So we kind of defined, you know, generic categories of agents and a protocol how these agents can interact with gray matter. And, you know, I would say, thankfully, and I think it was hard to predict at that point of time. Thankfully, it has gone through the test of times, and the protocols and data structures we imagined at that point of time have still been, you know, pretty consistent. And today, let's say, you know, when we get more robotic vendors onto us, we, you know, give them all the understanding of the category and data protocol, and then they kind of write adapters for that.
Yeah, those standards that you developed internally, or I mean, the question goes to where are we with developing universal standards, so to speak, that allow different agents inside the warehouse to talk to each other. I know there's yeah. a bunch of stuff happening on the standardization front, but how far are we, and how many and how much of that have you incorporated versus building it yourself or coming up with your own standards?
Yeah. I think back in 2018, it was more doing ourselves, right? Because there weren't too many players who were, you know, thinking like this, or, you know, but I must say that in last 6 to 9 months, I think we have now seen a good community where we have started contributing. We are starting to kind of get more and more, mm-hmm. you know, I would say players in the ecosystem to start, you know, working with us on it. So yeah, I think I would say it's still early days, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. as any technology kind of, you know, grows exponentially, I think, you know, my gut feel would be in, you know, 3 to 4 years, we would see lot more structured work happening on, okay, here are the, you know, 7 or 8, and, you know, of course these things will evolve, but here are the categories, right? This is how the, you know, data structure for each category looks like, right? And I think in last 6 to 9 months we have worked with more and more folks in the ecosystem, and I think we'll get to the point very soon in next 12 to 18 months where we start, you know, publishing more stuff and things like that. Although the same work on the third bucket of safety protocol, or of, you know, safety and reliability, has happened a lot more. For example, we have very closely worked with the UL 3100 body, which is the body for certification in QS. And I think CE already has some certification, but we have worked with a lot of safety, for AMR kind of bodies to, kind of work with some of our, players in the ecosystem to define that what does safety for AMRs means, right? What does safety for autonomous picking robots mean? So that, I think, is a lot more standardized now. You can go and see a UL 3100 document and that is more defined. I think, on the protocol part, on the digital interaction part, I think we are starting that journey, I would say, right? And it would take 2-3 years to get to the point where, it's a more, I would say, known standard. I would be a little skeptical on saying that there's going to be one global standard, right? I think there will be two or three standards and because, for example, even safety, it is UL, there is CE, and then Japan has its own, version of it. So I would say it would be hard to imagine one single, standard, but I'm pretty sure that there'll be 2-3 in the world.
And you've already started to explain some of the various parts and components of your system. You talked about gray matter already. Give us the quick overview of the entire system. So there's the hardware part, right? The Ranger robot series, and then the platform. Just give us an overview of what the solution looks like today, October 2021.
Sure. No, absolutely. I think, if I kind of explain this from maybe, top to bottom, and normally, having a diagram helps, but let me try and...
Not today. We just have to imagine it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, when you look at gray matter, and I'm kind of slightly, I've seen inside, gray matter. So at the top of gray matter lies a module called Dynamic Solver and Orchestrator. Right now, Dynamic Solver is all about, when you're doing end-to-end, warehouse orchestration, right? It's about three things, right? How do you make sure that inventory is distributed correctly in different parts of the warehouse, right? Because, a lot of warehouses would have deep storage, forward area, so how do you make sure that inventory is at the right time, at the right place, right? The second aspect is about how do you make sure, work is getting allocated correctly across different processes, right? And given the days of modern commerce we are, right? 2-hour deliveries, 4-hour deliveries, next day deliveries, all is I would say pretty strict. So making sure that work is correctly allocated and, that you have the right cutoffs for the right type of work and things like that, that's the second part. Third part is how do you correctly allocate people plus robots, what we call as agents, right, across different processes, right? And I'll give you a interesting example why this is very relevant. So let's say you are running a omni-channel fulfillment center, right? And as you went from, let's say, morning to evening, your channel mix changed from I would say retail to e-commerce, right? And suddenly your order characteristics change from 25 order lines per order to 2 order lines per order, right? Now, suddenly, as this was happening, right, you need far more packers than you needed while doing retail mix because, you were putting 20 items in a box. Now you're putting 2 items in a box. So suddenly, as this is changing, you got to pretty much reallocate your, people plus robots to a certain different process. So now these things keep happening in the fulfillment center pretty much on, minute by minute. So what Dynamic Solver Orchestrator does is to keep reallocating people plus robots across different, processes. So that's the module that's kind of, you can look at this as a, module at the top, looking at the complete, orchestration of the warehouse and kind of pulling strings here and there to kind of make things happen.
Yeah, Nakash, I often hear you refer to it as AI-enabled smart robots. So is that the AR part? And what of that, what you just described, is there? What is the AI there?
So I think within that, there are a lot of models built, right? For example, understanding that this particular process, right, for this kind of work, does this at X UPH, right? Our system would have built, learned from the past and understood that, okay, if you know, let's say a goods to person system has this characteristics of orders, right? You know, we will get, you know, 320 units per hour per station, right? So, you know, things like that. Understanding traffic patterns within these systems, right? You know, understanding... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is the learning based on what's happening inside an individual customer's fulfillment center or centers, or is it also learning across platforms from other situations at other customers?
So from other situations, it's learning in a more abstract way, right? So it's learning in a more just abstract way around, let's say, category of goods, right? So, you know, I'll give you another example, which has been pretty interesting, and this is something you know, which is gonna start impacting our software as we speak. So today, like, millions of transactions happen on our system every day. So, you know, at any point of time, there are thousands of people who are picking, you know, items from a rack, right? At any point of time, right? We collected so much data on that. If an item picks a certain type of SKU, right, let's say a red shirt, from third level of the shelf, right, which is kept with another blue jeans, he's going to take 3 seconds, right? You know, now we started building these models, right? And today we have so much understanding around this category that, you know, which SKU you should keep, you know, with what SKU, and at what level of shelf you keep, so that the picking is optimized. For example, if you keep a thin item, right, at the top of the shelf, the person is always going to take long to identify it and pick it, right? So now our system basically pretty much does this in real time, and it keeps learning about things, right? Because every time you pick something, it's a data point for you that when this, you know, when a phone was kept closer to another phone, the time taken for him to identify was 7 seconds, versus you'll get another point that when a category was kept along with other category, it took 4 seconds. Now the category-based learning, the abstract learning, is basically across the platform, right? So system is getting better and better in, you know, deciding where to keep items when they store it, so that when the person is picking, it is more, you know, efficient. So very, very intriguing. I would say thoughts of how we can start using a lot of AI ML to make things a lot more efficient and consistent. Yeah,
that's a great example. Yeah, let's move on to the rest of the system. What else? I mean, maybe if it's too comprehensive, let's maybe pick the most important point.
I think I've already picked the comprehensive part. And then basically there is what we call as Gray Matter Command Center, that is all about visualization, analytics. So we have a real-time visualization of the complete fulfillment center, and you can take actions around that. And then what we have is basically, you know, our apps for different processes. So you would have forward area picking, you have dock to stock, you have returns management. So, you know, pretty much apps for the complete fulfillment center, which basically execute things with a combination of people and robots. So these apps will decide, okay, I'm going to pick these 5 orders in next, 5 minutes. And just to, you know, mention one of the characteristics around this is that pretty much this is all happening in real time, right, with a close feedback, right? So system is only deciding the next few minutes of work, right? And then, you know, you do that work and take feedback, and then again decide the next few minutes of work and things like that, and keep optimization on the journey. So that's basically Gray Matter looks like, and then there are basically these robotic technologies, that are integrated across different processes. So just for example, let's say if you're talking about forward area pick, they are integrated with goods to person robotic technologies. They are integrated with in-aisle collaborative picking technologies. They are even integrated with handheld based, I would say manual picking technologies. So, you know, process is basically integrated with different type of execution technologies, which kind of forms the, you know, Ranger certified network today, which today has close to, 10 plus, robotic technologies within the network. Yeah,
I like the examples that you've given earlier around the challenges from moving from an omnichannel environment, moving from retail orders to e-commerce orders. Let's maybe take another example of a concrete set of challenges for customers. And I'm talking about peak season. It's almost upon us, and it's going to be headaches, in fulfillment centers across the world. Maybe we can pick a couple of challenges related to peak season and how Grey Orange, you feel like Grey Orange is uniquely equipped to address those. Let's just set aside all the run-of-the-mill stuff that any other system can do. But what, in the context of peak season, what are some of the capabilities that you feel that you have that are, that made the system unique?
Sure. So I think one of the very important or two of the very important aspects around peak season is that how do you, I would say, flex your capacity across the day, right? And how do you make sure that, you know, your system can still meet SLAs when you are doing, you know, peak, right? You know, how do you make sure that you expand, you're able to expand your overall throughput, right? And that work happens 2 months before the peak, you know, because on the peak, it's all showtime, right? Peak is like, okay, I've done what I've done, now let's go, right? And I think that's an important aspect. And for example, a lot of customers we have kind of, you know, who we have helped them to expand their, you know, capacity, expand, you know, add, you know, another very good aspects around gray matter and Ranger technologies is you can add more robots at any point of time. You know, you can be very flexible around, okay, you know, for at least 5-6 of our customers, if we went and automated some of their other processes because they were having a lot of challenges in finding people for those processes, right? So I think one of the aspects around
that's a classic, right? That's a common problem that everybody has. Yeah,
absolutely, shortages galore. So how do you make sure that people in warehouses for the peak are only doing things that cannot be done by, you know, automation, because it's even, you know, harder to find people for those things, right? So yeah. I think that's a very important aspect of being able to, you know, very quickly add capacity, add automation to a certain process, you know, part of it. And second important aspect is also around returns management, right? You know, because while peak comes in, right, you know, you know, just after the peak, there's a challenge of how do you handle all those returns, and, you know, how do you make sure that, you know, the return inventory doesn't get lost, because, you know, that's a fairly valuable inventory. And again, I think that's something that using Grey Matter and Ranger, technologies, you can handle in a lot more effective way. And third is just to do this reliably, right? Just to make sure that your platform supports, you know, 300,000 units per fulfillment node for, like, you know, hundreds of fulfillment node that you would be operating. So, you know, one of the larger challenge of having one software platform is that, you know, in the peak, it's going to be just like, you know, it's all going to add up, because, you know, it's not that some customers are going through it and some are not going through it. It's just, I would say, going through that, reliably, and, you know, going through it reliably at the scale of, you know, running thousands of robots, right, in one single facility, right, you know, and doing that reliability. I think that's, you know, that's something that Grey Matter is pretty excel doing that, you know, in terms of running 300,000 units, you know, shipping 300,000 units a day from a facility, you know, continuously for 10 days, right? And I think we have done this last peak. We are, you know, doing this, you know, going to do this peak. But I think that part itself is a fairly, you know, challenging part. And I think Grey Orange is fairly uniquely positioned with all the experience we have had in last two peaks. I think that experience is extremely valuable for us and our customers, to be very honest, that we know that how do you run such automated facilities at that scale without any interruptions for 30 days, right? I think that having that experience and capability is a fairly unique aspect.
Let's talk about Europe. I mean, you're not quite a household name yet in Europe. I assume that's about to change, and at least that's your ambition. You're making a major push into the European market, into Germany and the Netherlands and Belgium. Talk to me about your European plans and what you have in store there for us here in Europe.
Absolutely. I think, I would say I've always seen Europe as starting slower and accelerating faster, right? And we did our first, set up in Europe with a customer back in 2000, 17, you know, and then we have been slowly kind of growing into Europe. But I think last 12 to 18 months in Europe has been amazing. I think, you know, the kind of pull that we have seen now is very, very, you know, very, very different. And I think, you know, we are in the process of expanding our teams in Europe. You know, I would say spending more and more time with customers, because I think one of the bigger challenges in Europe, and it's similar in US, but I would say a little larger in Europe, is that, you know, the education or the knowledge within the companies to select the right technology, right? I think so. We have been working with a lot of, you know, customers on to help them understand, and this is just not about Grey Orange, but help them understand what does the new paradigm of software and robotics look like for their, you know, their supply chain. And I think all that is kind of, you know, accelerating more and more adoption in the market. You know, one of our customers which went public with us, you know, from the robotics perspective, you know, Active Ants, we are, you know, I would say expanding with them. We did one facility, you know, 12 months back, and we are now kind of doing that in, you know, more facilities, and similarly with some of the other large enterprise customers who we are working with. So I think I would say what Europe was, you know, 18 months back, and what it is today is, you know, a sea change in the way we are seeing the, you know, adoption interest and the way people are, you know, starting to kind of understand and take decisions. I think we should see a very strong adoption in next 12 to 18 months across the industry. And I'm not just talking about Grey Orange. I think Grey Orange, you know, of the world, auto stores of the world, I think we are going to see a very steep adoption curve in Europe in next, you know, 12 to 18 months, and across the products, across companies and industries. Yeah,
it's going to be exciting times. So if you would describe the ideal customer, what sort of industry, what sort of footprint, what sort of challenges, describe to me is just a couple of sort of quintessential, you know, prototypical customers that should be looking at your guys' solution.
Sure. So we are, you know, we are not limited to, but our focus has been into, you know, three industries, right? Where we believe that we have very clear understanding of what exactly are the pain points and how do we solve them, right? So these three industries basically are fashion, apparel, cosmetics. That's one part of it, right? You know, the second is basically home improvement, you know, so, and third is basically general merchandising minus the fresh part, right? I think we are starting to do more, you know, work around the fresh industry, but, you know, general merchandising, we've spent a lot of time. So I think these are the three, from the industry perspective, sweet spots that, you know, we understand the nuance of each of these industries, and we understand, you know, how to solve problems for these industries, right? You know, from the footprint perspective, I think footprint have stopped mattering, to be very honest. We are running... We are running or shipping, you know, from fulfillment nodes that ship 5,000 units, and we are shipping fulfillment nodes that ships 200,000 units. So I think, you know, till you are in these industries with a certain, you know, scale of, let's say, 5,000 units a day, I think, you know, it, you know, robotics and the software technology makes sense. The other very important aspect is that if you're trying to solve for omni-channel, right? Because, you know, I would say we have been pretty much at the forefront of solving omni-channel challenges, fulfillment challenges for a lot of customers, a lot of very large retail customers, right? So I think, you know, we our team has very good understanding of how to solve for omni-channel fulfillment, right? You know, which is across fulfillment nodes, or build omni-channel fulfillment center for this. And third, I would say important aspect is for all those, you know, people or customers who are trying to move with a lot of, you know, speed and flexibility, you know, in micro fulfillment centers or dark stores, or just using, you know, store inventory to fulfill, right? You know, we also, I would say added a module where we are using store inventory to start doing fulfillment, right? So I think that's the third, you know, I would say core aspect that we have focused on, where you start using, you know, dark stores or store inventory or micro fulfillment centers to, I would say, you know, solve those challenges. So I would say those three aspects are core aspects that we would solve for our customers. Yeah.
Yeah. When you say dark stores, so would that include like the Q-commerce players, like the GoPuffs of the world, or the Gorillas, or is that too fresh? As you're saying, fresh isn't your forte.
Yeah. No. I think I would say it's starting to become, you know, very mm-hmm. important for us, right? You know, because you know, again, you know, the technology. When we are doing this in all these three fields, the technology is maturing. But today, technology is very mature. So adding an industry is more of just knowing the nuances of that industry rather than kind of building anything for that industry. So it's the curve of acceleration is pretty steep in that trend. Yeah.
Yeah. Super exciting. Yeah, I'm especially intrigued about you guys beefing up the team and the expertise here in Europe. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of you guys around here. So maybe we'll do a second part sometime around next year and see how well you've done. But Akash, fantastic. This is an awesome story. Yeah, I'll leave a link in the show notes if people want to find out more. You have a team on the ground here now in Germany too. I know a few folks that joined your organization, so that's always a good mm-hmm. sign. Fantastic stuff. I mean, I wish you good luck and all the best of conquering Europe. Yeah, thanks for coming on the program, Akash.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It was lovely. Thank you.
Awesome. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was the BVL Digital Podcast episode with Akash Gupta from Grey Orange. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If so, please consider subscribing to the podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes, most of which are in German, but we occasionally have very exciting international guests like Akash on that you don't want to miss. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.